ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, chapter 8, text number 21, 22, 23, 24, and 25, none of which have purports. So I'm going to take advantage of reading the verses and then sliding right over to Shyamananda Pandit.
You're starting with 21?
What's that?
You're
starting with 21, yes. Yeah, because 20 is the middle of the last verse. So there was a misprint in the verse assignment. Shigarandi and I talked about that. That got all straightened out. So today is 21 to 25, and tomorrow, and then tomorrow is 26 to 34.
36 to 34.
Okay. All right? Okay, so. Udach Chantanisham Bhaktra Pravala Stavakali B Gopa Druma Latatja Lais Tetrashit Hu Shumakara. Translation. Springtime then appeared in Markandeya's ashram. Indeed, the evening sky, glowing with the light of the rising moon, became the very face of spring, and sprouts and fresh blossoms virtually covered the multitude of trees and creepers. Anviyamana Gandhar Vyayar Gita Vida Viditra Yuktakai Adrishyat Tattakapeshu Svasti Yuta Pati Smara. Translation. I'm reading 21, 22, 23, 24, and then we're chanting 25. Translation. Cupid, the master of many heavenly women, then came there holding his bows and arrows. He was followed by groups of Gandharvas playing musical instruments and singing. Put Vagnim Samapashinam Dudrishu Shakrachkenkara Mili Taksham Duradarsham Murti Mantam Ivan Nalam. Translation. These servants of Indra found the sage sitting in meditation, having just offered his prescribed oblations into the sacrificial fire. His eyes closed in trance, he seemed invincible, like fire personified. Nantus tasya purata, nanritus tasya purata, shriyoto gayaka gagu, mridanga vina panavair, vadyam chaku manoramam. Translation. The women danced before the sage, and the celestial singers sang to the charming accompaniment of drums, cymbals, and vinas. And in the verse we chant today. Sandaye stam svadanusi. Are we there? No? What do we know? Sandaye stam svadanusi kama pancha mukham tada madhur mano rajastoka indra britya vakampayam. Translation. While the son of passion, greed personified, Spring and the other servants of Indra all tried to agitate Markandeya's mind, Cupid drew his five-headed arrow and fixed it upon his bow. Om jnana tamarandasya janam jana shalakaya chakshurhum nalitam yana tasmai sumi purvena kham mukam karoti vachalam kham yunyam jayati viri yakribatam hum Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasa Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama. These handful of verses here are giving us a description, are concluding actually the description of the ashram of Markandeya Rishi. It's interesting in this first verse here. Pravala Stavaka, new sprouts and blossoms. This is the indication of spring. especially in a climate like we have here, and what would be a somewhat tropical climate where his ashram is, the trees are always there. But in the springtime, we get so many buds and new growth coming, and that's indicative to us, oh, the new season is coming. And usually those carry with them nice fragrances of sweet flowers and the like. So these new buds were so proficient, they completely covered all the trees and creepers. Here occasionally we'll get some tree that's got some buds on it. You can see, oh, there's a tree that's got some flowers. In this case, it was like, it was all flowers. This is how amazing his ashram is. That just completely, you know, wonderful, like springtime. And this was considered very, very pleasing, and very desirous, and very auspicious. And then the next verse, Cupid, the master of many heavenly women, then came there, holding his bows and arrows. Now, generally, when we think of bows and arrows, we think of a battle, you know, some type of attack. If someone has bows and arrows, they're generally not neutral. Bows and arrows, they're either defending or offending. And either way, it involves taking a stance and attacking something or someone. So Cupid, of course, even in Western understanding, Cupid's got bows and arrows. You know, Valentine's Day, everybody gets the little card with the little Cupid with his wings and his bows and arrows, and it's all so cute and all about love and everything. Well, in reality, that's true. Cupid is there with his bows and arrows. But those bows and arrows are not just about, oh, love and sweetness. They're about completely overpowering the senses, which we'll get to in the last verse here. And who are Cupid's associates? Well, we see that these sages, their associates, are all other sadhus, all other kapaspis, persons performing austerity, persons engaged in devotional activities. You see the Vaishnavas, they're always associated with other Vaishnavas, those who are trying to glorify the Lord, to engage in kirtan. Cupid, he's associating with all the heavenly women. Now, these heavenly women are not neutral. They have their purpose. And their purpose is to distract everyone from the path of devotional service. And particularly in this storyline, Indra's very concerned. That poor guy Indra, you know, he's always very concerned. He's always worried somebody's going to take my spot. I mean, are the sages really thinking, oh, you know, if I just perform enough penance, I can have Indra's spot? They're really not in that mindset. But the nature, as Prahlad Maharaj instructs to us in the seventh canto, of seeing friends and enemies, is that we think someone's for us and someone's against us. So Indra's thinking all these sages are against me. They just want my position so they can enjoy. But the sages have all given up enjoyment. That's why they're living in the Himalayas, or living in these ashrams, or performing austerities, or dressing in tree bark, or fasting for X number of days, whatever it is they're doing. They're not doing it so that they can attain Indra's position, but the nature of sense gratification is you're always fearful someone's going to take what I've got. Isn't that true? You know, you see these signs in people's yards around here. Don't worry about the owner. Worry about the, you know, what is it, 45 or what's that? What Smith and Wesson. Don't worry about the owner. Worry about Smith and Wesson. Or don't worry about the dog or whatever. You know, they're making all these provisions to protect themselves because they're afraid everything's going to be taken. Ultimately, everything is taken to death. Everything is taken to death. You can't stop it. Doesn't matter how many guns you have, how many dogs you have in your yard, how high your fence is, Yamaraj just threw all and takes everyone. So Cupid, yes, he's got his bows and arrows, but these bows and arrows are for attacking us in a different way, attacking our desires for sense enjoyment. So, and when he goes, he's followed by his entourage. And these are all these Gandharvas who are playing all so many instruments to enhance that mood. You can sit down in the temple room just by yourself and sing kirtan. That's nice. If you add kartals, it becomes a little nicer. If you add mridanga, then you have Lord Chaitanya's movement. And then maybe you add some harmonium, some vina, then it becomes a very, oh, so much sound, so pleasing. The mind immediately becomes attractive. So, the same way here, Cupid's not just coming with his bows and arrows, he's setting a whole scene. You know, making everything very pleasing. The fragrance of the flowers is there, the wonderful music is there. The attractive Gandharvas and Apsaras are there, and then his arrows come. So this is the way he sets the scene up to bring about what he plans will be the downfall of Markandeya Rishi. From the next verse. The servants of Indra found the sage sitting in meditation, having just offered his prescribed oblations into the sacrificial fire. His eyes closed in trance. He seemed invincible, like fire personified. Now, it doesn't specifically mention the word in this verse, either in Sanskrit or in English, but this is indicative that he's daily performing this activity. It's not like, well, once a week on Sunday for a couple of hours, he does some meditation, lights a fire, and then the rest of the time he does whatever. These great sages, they're engaged like this regularly. We've been mentioning this in our last few classes, wherever we've been lately, this Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, is regularly hearing the message of human Bhagavatam, regularly hearing the message of the spiritual master, regularly associating with devotees for the topics of Krishna Katha. So in this case, a little bit different focus, but it's the same thing regularly. So he's just performed his oblations to the sacrificial fire, and he's sitting there with his eyes closed, it mentions. If you've had the opportunity to be in kirtan with a kirtan leader who's very seriously fixed, you see that, generally speaking, their eyes are closed. And is that because they're just, no, it's because they're blocking out all the different types of sense gratification that can distract. Because this is the nature of the sense. Everything, and so if one's not seeing these things, then it's easier to go internal. So in this way, the sage is doing that, and while doing that, he appears to be invincible. Okay, Cupid's got his bows and arrows, but what good are those bows and arrows against the invincibility of a strict disciple? And how invincible? Just like fire. When there's a big fire, you don't go in it. You can't pass through it. If you're a fireman and you're taking your training, the first thing they teach you is when you go to that door, first you test it. You don't just throw it open, because if there's fire on the other side, it'll blow up and then you can't get through it. You know? And this is the glory of those persons who are firemen, is that they do rush into that fire to save people. But the ordinary person can't do that. The fire is invincible. They have on protective suit and special breathing apparatus and gear so that they can somehow do that. Otherwise, completely invincible. So we're not able to, just like when we, even when we have a small sacrificial fire for the different homes that we perform, nobody reaches their hand through the fire to get to the other side of the pit. Sometimes as a Purohit, you see that happen. You put the wood in, you put your hand a little, all the hairs get burned up to here, you know, it's like that. The fire's invincible. You cannot pass through it. So this is how determined and how focused the trance of Markandeya Rishi was. Not able to be passed through. And then the next verse here. The women danced before the sage, and the celestial singers saw to the charming accompaniment of musical instruments. Prabhupada speaks about this in many, many places, about the nature of women getting on stage and dancing. And we're not talking Bharatanatyam and these devotional dances, but this is a different type of dance. And you can be guaranteed that these ladies were not dressed in the, as we'll find out tomorrow when Panchakota speaks, they're not dressed in the most chaste of manners. They're dressed in a very alluring way, and they're dancing in an even more alluring way, all for the purpose of enticing the sage. Because what is the nature of an ordinary man? He becomes enticed by the alluring dressing and dancing of a woman. This is the nature of the material world. But they've made a big miscalculation. Markandeya Rishi is not in the material world. Markandeya Rishi is very fixed in his devotional mindset. So these things are not, you know, botheration to him. You can have your drums, your cymbals, your dinas, whatever kind of instruments you want. Markandeya is not noted here. But then here comes the big punchline. While the son of passion, greed personified, Spring and the other servants of Indra tried to agitate. So this isn't just the Gandharva ladies coming. I mean, the Apsara ladies coming and doing their dancing and enticing and movements and whatever to try and distract them. But the son of passion, greed personified. Every living entity is motivated by greed, particularly in the human form of life. This greed is something that just drives us for our business accomplishments, for our personal accomplishments, for our prestige. All of these things, we become very greedy. Now, ultimately, of course, we want to become greedy for the process of devotional service to prema. But prior to that, this is the other type. So this greed personified is there with Spring and all these other servants trying to agitate Markandeya. And while they're doing this, Cupid gets his thing together. He's got this quiver of arrows. He's got so many arrows in this. So he pulls out the one arrow. It's got five heads on it. Now, the verse doesn't specify this, but in the Sanskrit, the translation of the verse, it's indicated. He pulls out his panchamukham. arrow that has five heads. And what are those five heads? Sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. These are the five sense objects that when agitated, any one of them can be agitated. Prabhupada gives that famous story how in the animal kingdom, different species are agitated in different ways. He says the fish, they become agitated by the tongue. You know, the man puts a hook in there with a worm on it, and the worm's wiggling around, and the fish thinks, oh, the fish has so much food in the ocean. Oh, but here's something very special. Bites it, he gets caught. And then he gives the example of the deer by hearing, that they, you know, they hear the sound of food, they stop and listen, and they're taken by the hunter. And he gives the example of the elephant by sex desire. The elephant, they take a female elephant in rut, as they say, and stake her on the opposite side of a big pit. The elephant comes, falls in the pit, they capture the elephant. So like this, all the different animals have the bee, he has a desire for tasting sweet things. He goes into the flower, and the flower closes and he's captured. So all these different five senses, and then Prabhupada in that example when he's given that, he says, but the human being, he is captured by all five of them. So we have all the five of these senses that are attacking us. So in this way, Cupid has this particular arrow that takes all the five senses, and then he shoots that at the person, and they become completely overwhelmed. What's that they say? I read this the other day. You know that tingly feeling you get in your body when you like somebody? That's your common sense draining out. So here we see that this is what's going on. The five senses are being attacked, and everything just becomes so wonderful. You know, I can hear this, I can smell that, I can see that, oh, there, let me touch them, all of these things. And then one falls into the material form. So Cupid, on behalf of Indra, made this big miscalculation. He's thinking, this is just, some ordinary human being. I'm a demigod. I'm not a demigod, I'm the demigod. Right? Isn't that how Indra thinks? He's not thinking, oh, I'm one of the demigods. No, I'm the demigod. I'm the king of heaven. You know, nobody's getting my massage. I just said, okay, Cupid, go take care of this. And Cupid, of course, is subservient to Indra. He is the king of the demigods, so he sends him. And on behalf of them, they're thinking, this market there, we'll just, But this is the protection of devotion and service. Otherwise, how is it in our younger days, we would take such amazing risks on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, go into bars for distributing books, going to these I remember we used to somehow or other get tickets and go into the concerts and do row to row, distributing books and incense and whatever else we were distributing to people, collecting donations from them. And we weren't enticed to, here's another CD. They said, watch this band. Great, wow. I remember when they came about 3 years ago, I saw them, it wasn't an enticement. Going to the bars, Jayananda was famous when the devotees would meet some of Jayananda's old friends in the bars, they would give them bags of groceries. Oh, Johnny Ananda, here, this is for him, So in this way, the devotees are not tempted by these things because they're protected by the process of devotional service, which is why it's so important that we have that protection. And that protection comes from regularly executing our devotional service. Worshiping the deity, chanting our japa, reading the books, associating with Vaishnavas, taking prasadam. These are all, to us, simple things, but they are the protection that prevent the five arrows, the five-headed arrow of Cupid, from having any effect on us. So this is just a few things I was thinking about in this particular verse here today. Panchakota's got a good one tomorrow, so that'll be a wonderful opportunity to hear from him. But we wanted to take the bulk of the time today and speak about Shaman and the Pandit. Today is the disappearance celebration of Shamananda. And he's an Orya Baba. He's from Orissa, Utkala. And he is one of the heroes in our Sankirtan movement, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Narottam Das Thakur, Shamananda Pandit, and Srinivasacharya. These three were inseparable. They all came through different circumstances to be under the tutelage of Jiva Goswami. Shamananda Pandit, his birth name was Dukia. His mother and father Sri Krishna Mandala and what was his mother's name? Dharika. Yeah. So they had had many children, sons and daughters, and they all died. None of them lived through childhood. And so the parents were quite, you know, disturbed, quite upset. So when this child was born, they named him Dukhya. Please don't give us any unhappiness by taking this child also. So he's very fortunate to live. And everyone was very amazed that this particular child was such a highly elevated soul. So many good qualities were found in him. He was born on a full moon day, very auspicious time. And it was considered that he was born by the grace of Lord Jagannath, because his parents were great devotees of Lord Jagannath, and that Lord Jagannath had brought him into this world for the purpose of propagating the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It was described by some that he was just like a new Cupid. He was so handsome, even as a young child, and his eyes and his mind were so soothing, just to look upon him when he become just so happiness and satisfaction. Time passed, he performed all the different samskaras, the cutting of the hair, the piercing of the ears, the learning of the alphabet, all of these different things were performed. And from the very beginning of the time of his education, he was it was amazing to everyone how quickly he learned everything, how profound his intellect was, how he was able to grasp any subject that was put before him within a very short time. And so very quickly he passed through all of his grammar and poetry and rhetoric and logic and all these subjects, you know. And he heard during this time the glories of Sri Chaitanya and Sri Nityananda. There were Vaishnavas in the village, they lived, of course, and they would always gather and speak about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And hearing these things, he developed a very deep attachment within his heart for the process of serving Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and hearing their pastimes. Well, Sri Mandala, his father, of course, was a very advanced devotee anyway, and seeing his son progressing in this way, he thought, you know, he should be initiated into the divine mantra. It should be arranged for him. So he spoke to him about this one day. He wanted this to be the boy's focus. The boy revealed something very amazing. He said, actually, my guru is Sri Hridai Chaitanya. And he is living in Ambika Kalna. For those of you that are not familiar, Ambika Kalna is one of the most wonderful, beautiful places you'll ever see. And so many Vaishnavas come from there. It's a hotbed of Vaishnava activity from the time of Mahaprabhu. So he mentioned that this Hridai Chaitanya is my guru. He lives in Ambika Kalna, and he is the disciple of Gauridas Pandit. So quite an amazing mind here. And he said, Sri Chaitanya and Nityananda, they personally live in his home. This is a pretty amazing statement. So he said, my dear father, if you give me your permission, then I will go there and I will become his disciple. And his father said, but yeah, this is another village on Ambika Kalna. We're living in Orissa. How will you get there? Well, father, so many people are traveling to take bath in the Ganga. We just recently had Ganga Puja, and it was mentioned how people would regularly go for bathing in the Ganga, even some distances they would travel. He said, I will simply go along with these crowds when they go, and then I'll be able to go there. So the father thought for some time on this, and said, all right, he agreed, you can go. So in this way, Dukhi set out with groups of devotees going to Gaudadesh. He came to Navadvip, passed through Navadvip, and came to Shantipur after that, and he passed through Shantipur. And then he eventually came to Ambika Kalna, and he arrived at the home, the ancestral home of Gauridas Pandit. And outside the gate to the courtyard, he fell and offered full obeisances. And Hridai Chaitanya happened to be coming back to go to the ashram, and saw this young boy from Orissa offering obeisances. He's outside the gate to his home. Looked at him for a few minutes. So, who are you? You can imagine you come to your home and there's some young person there offering obeisances. He's outside your door that you've never seen before. So what's the natural? So who are you? And he said, I'm here to serve your Lord's. He said, my home is in Orissa. And I was born in the caste of Sadgopas. My father's name is Sri Krishna Mandala, and my name is Dukhya. And I have come to serve you. Who Rita Chaitanya was very, very pleased by his sweet words. He thought for a moment. He said, Dukkha, this means unhappy. He said, no, this is not your name. And now in your name will be Krishna. Krishna Das. Dukkha Krishna. One who is not unhappy because he has Krishna. So he mentioned like this right away. He said, since this morning when I rose, I had a feeling someone special would be coming today. I would meet them, and I can see that as you. So he accepted him as his disciple, and some short time later, they performed the initiation ceremony properly, and he gave him the divine mantra. And in this way, he stayed in the ashram there of Rito Chaitanya. Now, in a short order of time, Rito Chaitanya could see that this young man is very, very intelligent, extremely intellectual, and you know he's very devoted. So I should make some special arrangement. I'm going to send you to Vrindavan. You can study under Jiva Goswami. So first he sent some letter to Jiva Goswami to inform him that this would take place. He was sending his disciple there. And he said, in Vrindavan, you'll study the literatures of the Goswamis. Jiva Goswami is there. He hasn't passed away yet. These are some of the later original disciples of Mahaprabhu that are still on the planet. So Krishna Das took this instruction from the spiritual master. And on a properly auspicious day, he set off to Vrindavan. Rito Chaitanya gave him many different instructions about what to do and requested him, when you get to Vrindavan, please offer my obeisances to the lotus feet of all the remaining Goswamis. So Dukkha Krishna, he traveled. First he went through Navadvip. And when he was in Navadvip, he inquired about the home of Jagannath Mishra Bhavan. And he went there and he met Vishantakur. Vishantakur had been the family servant in the home of Mahaprabhu since the time of Jagannath Mishra. After Jagannath Mishra departed, well, first his brother departed, and then Jagannath Mishra departed, and then Mahaprabhu left, and then Satyamata left, and then Vishnu Kriya. So all these times, Vishantakur had been their servant. And when they had all left, he was still maintaining the home. And devotees would come, and Narottam had gone there, and Rishikriti Krishna had gone there, and he would take them around. This is where Mahaprabhu ate the clay pots, and this is where Mahaprabhu was born under the tree, and this and all these, he would point all these places out. Such a wonderful service. So he stayed there for some time, and Vishantakur introduced him around to some of the different devotees, and then the next day he left to continue on his path going. So there were some pilgrims going the tour, so he went with them to the tour, passed on his way there. He passed through Gaya. He remembered Lord Chaitanya taking initiation from Ishwar Puri at that time, and how he stayed in the home of Tapan Mishra and met with Chandrasekhar. All of these different pastimes of the Lord, each place he went, he was able to remember them. This is the mode of a devotee. He's not going on a tourist visa, you know. Just, oh, I'll go to this place, I'll go to that place, I'll see this place. No, every place that he saw and remembered the pastimes of Mahaprabhu that took place there. Finally, he arrived in Mathura, took his bath in Vishram Ghat upon arriving there, and took the darshan of the Adi Keshava deity, rolling in the dust of Braj, where everything is beginning there. And then he continued on to Vrindavan. When he arrived in Vrindavan, he inquired, where is the ashram of Jiva Goswami? And he went to Jiva Goswami's place, and offered his obeisances, presented himself, gave his identification, and then passed on all the messages from Rito Chaitanya like this. And Jiva Goswami, of course, had been waiting for him, because Rito Chaitanya had written ahead, I'm sending my disciples. So he was very, very happy to receive him. And Krishna Das was very attentive serving Jiva Goswami. Studied under him, as I mentioned, with Srinivasacharya and Narottam Das Thakur, the three of them. It says they were like one mind in three bodies. Every day they were studying together, doing their bhajan together, going to take bath in the Jamuna together. You know, the three of them were very, very focused. Now, after some time, Dukkha Krishna requested of Jiva Goswami, is there some special seva I can do while I'm here in Vrindavan? You know, devotees go to Vrindavan, they don't want it to be just, yeah, I went to Vrindavan, I went here, I went there, you know, I stopped at the Taj Mahal, I stopped in Jaipur, you know, I want to do some special service. So he requested Jiva Goswami, is there some special seva I can do in the Dham? This is how, you can ask Panchakota, this is how you say in the Dham. Not that you go there and you get a place to live in the MBT and you eat in the restaurant each day and you're able to stay there. You're up there doing some seva, some service. This is what will allow you to stay there. The Dhamma is a personality. The Dhamma is not hosting bums. So you have to do some service to get the attention of the Dhamma. So the Dhamma will bless you. Yes, you can stay there. So Dukhi Krishna is asking like this. Is there some special service? So Jiva Goswami told him, you go to Seva Kunj. And in Seva Kunj, you take a broom and you clean the area there, sweep the path. And you do this every day. So this became his regulated service, along with his study under Jiva Goswami and associating with his two god brothers and all. He would go each day to Seva Kunj with a little broom. Similar, Narottam Das Thakur was doing like that, if you remember, going to the ashram of Lokanath Goswami and cleaning it when Lokanath Goswami was not attentive after he had used the facilities. This was his service, sweeping. You know, this, we sometimes kind of dismiss the activity of sweeping. You know, there's one devotee in this community. He comes every day. He was using a broom. Now he uses a blower and sweeps all these walkways once we're all gone. You know, when he's in town, he comes every day and does that seva all the way out to the driveway. You know, Narottam Das Thakur was sweeping the bathroom area of Lokanatha Swami every day. Dukhi Krishna is sweeping the Seva Kunj area where Radha and Krishna performing their pastime. King Prataparudra was sweeping the path in front of Lord Jagannath. So we shouldn't dismiss the sweeping activity. I remember when I was a young brahmachari, we each had our service after the morning class. We had a thriving temple of young devotees, so everybody had their cleaning service. And you swept the hallway, or you cleaned the basement, or maybe you cleaned ashram, but you hankered in your mind to be the one that got to sweep the temple, mop the floor in there. And I remember very clearly when I got promoted, so to speak, Prabhu, starting today, you'll clean the temple room in front of Bhunatai. Wow, I get to sweep the temple room in front of the deities, because the curtains were open, so the deities could see you, and you were sweeping their floor. You know, so this became a great thing. So we shouldn't dismiss this sweeping activity when the opportunity comes our way. Anyway, so Dukhi Krishna was sweeping every day, going in, and he felt his life had been complete. This is the beauty of engaging in devotional service in the proper mentality. He felt that everything I've desired in life has now come fulfilled just by this sweeping activity here. Sometimes while he was sweeping, he would chant the names of Radha Govinda. Sometimes he would remember some of the pastimes he had heard from Jiva Goswami. Sometimes he would, you know, recite different verses. Often he would take that broom, and we're not talking broom like we have in the West, but you know those straw brooms put together, and he would take it because the dust had collected in there, and he would shake it on its head. There's these boys in Govardhan. Somehow I always figure a way to put Govardhan. There's these boys out of Govardhan, you see them, particularly in Anayur. They have these big brooms, and they're sweeping the path every day just to get all the footprints gone and make all the sand nice and smooth. And, you know, if you get them in the right mood, they'll shake that broom on your head. You get all that dust from all the pilgrims that have walked the previous day. You know, so in this way, this was one of the activities that Dukhi Krishna was doing. You know, it mentions that even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they prayed just to get a little bit of dust from Braj on their heads. And here Dukhi Krishna was taken from Seva Kunj, the most sacred of places. So Radharani and Krishna were becoming very pleased by this mood of service, and Dukhi Krishna decided to give him some special blessings. So one day he's cleaning the Kunj, his heart's completely filled with love in this service, and he happens to see just over in the corner bracelet, some ankle belt or something. So he goes and picks it up, and it's incredibly brilliant, the sun. And when he touches it, he feels this, this is something very special. Someone has lost this. So he takes his cloth and puts it in there, and ties it up in a knot. Someone will come and ask for this. I'll give it to them when they come. Of course, he didn't have a quilt. So I'll give this to them when they come, you know. But they'll come looking for it. So, in another realm, that morning, all the Shakyas were gathering together, and suddenly they became shocked because they realized that Srimati Radharani was missing her left ankle bracelet. It was not there. brought her on and explained. It was shocking. She said, you know, it must have fallen off in the clincher last night when I was having a touch time. My parents find out it's missing. They'll ask where it is, and they'll think I lost it in the bed, and they'll look in the bed and see it's not there and want to know where it was, and then, oh, so much trouble comes. Shaka, please. So Shaka transitioned into this realm and came to save a clinch, and there was Dukhi Krishna, and he's sleeping. Babaji, Prabhu, have you found one ankle belt or something here? Dukhi Krishna was completely mesmerized by the sight of the Shaka. Of course, she had disguised herself in some way because that transcendental form from the spiritual world of here would have been too overwhelming. But still, you can't hide such a thing. So, and just her sweet words and her appearance was completely mesmerized. She said, have you found some ankle bell? You know, did you find something here? He was a little, you know, like, hello, you there? Come on, I'm talking to you. I'm sorry. Yes, I found that ankle bell yesterday. He actually, it says in the story that he actually offered obeisances. He understood this is some great personality. He said, yes, I found it, and who might you be? Oh, I'm just a cowherd girl. Where do you stay? Here in this village. Oh, but I've never seen you. No, I live on the other side of the village. And your ankle bell has been lost? No, it's not mine. It belonged to a new bride in the home. Oh, well, how did it get here? Well, she came here to pick flowers for decorating herself for the wedding yesterday, and it got lost, and so, you know, she asked me to come and get it for her. He says, so you can just give it to me. He says, no, I'll give it to her personally. Dukhi Krishna was a little, you know, smart. You bring her here, I'll give it to her personally. Shaka said the word, so she, all right, just one moment. Back to the devotee. He doesn't want to give it to me, he wants to give it to you. She brought it to my daughter. So Shaka returned to Seva Kunj with Radharani. Radharani was standing in the shade of a large tree, and Shaka called out to Krishnadasa. Bhakta, oh Bhakta. That person who has lost her ankle bracelet, she is now come to you to receive it. Dukhi Krishna, you can understand how he was mesmerized by seeing the form of a Shaka. But how mesmerized did he see the form of Shaka? Even though it was from some distance, the beauty was unparalleled and the brilliant splendor of her appearance. Now, of course, these pastimes are there. They're not for us to think we can imitate or imagine that it may happen to us or whatever, but these are the activities of our acharyas that are there for us to learn from them. So he went before her, and with great joy, he handed over the bracelet. And tears filled his eyes. He fell down on the ground offering his obeisances. And he rolled in the dust at the feet of these two beautiful gopis, you know. And the Shaka addressed him. She said, oh, best of the devotees, our Shaki here, she wants to give you a benediction to express her gratitude. And it mentions that Dukhi Krishna looked upon her and saw as if all the holy waters of Radhakund were present right in front of her. And in this way, he got the mercy of Srimati Radharani. And he was brought before Srimati Radharani. And Radharani took this bracelet and placed it upon his forehead. And when it was placed on his forehead, it made an imprint as this Shyamananda Tilak that we see that they were in Vrindavan, those their followers in this land. And that also left some mark of the kumkum that was from her lotus feet. So Srimati Radharani said, this Tilak will remain on your forehead now. From this day, you will be known as Shyamananda. Shyamananda means the one who has achieved ananda or bliss from Shyama, from Srimati. Now you can go back to the seva. And he turned to see the seva she indicated to the Shaka and Radharani were gone. So, you know, this is not an ordinary experience. He mentions that Dukhi Krishna had been like in a trance-like state as all this was going on. And he then found himself back in the Konja alone with his broom in his hand. And, you know, he thought, what have I seen? What has just happened here? And tears began to roll down his cheeks. And he began to recite hundreds and hundreds of prayers in glorification of Srimati Radharani. So he thought, I have to share this with someone, but I can't just, hey, Prabhu, guess what happened? You know, that's how we are. You know, something really special happened to us. We can't wait to post it on Facebook or, you know, Instagram or, you know, pictures of us with, you know, I just met so-and-so, Baba, you know, whatever it is. So it wasn't like that. So he very humbly went to Jiva Goswami, because this was not the kind of thing that a sincere devotee broadcasts. A sincere devotee doesn't broadcast, hey, guess what just happened to me? No, that's not the mood of a sincere devotee. He went to Jiva Goswami very humbly, and Jiva Goswami immediately saw the tilak markings on his forehead. And so he explained to him the whole story, and Jiva listened. And he saw that his Dukhi Krishna Shyamananda was telling the story. His eyes were brimming with tears. He gave the entire scenario, and Jiva Goswami listened. He said, okay, you don't reveal this to anyone. You don't say anything about what's happened to anyone. This will be between you and I. This is something very special. But just for today, you carry on. From today, you carry on with the name Shyamananda. So, village life is such that people notice things and say things. You know, nothing goes unknown here in Alachua. You know, we have a handful of people who see and hear everything and let everyone know everything that they've seen and heard. You know, this happens. And so soon, everyone was noticing. He's got a new tilak, he's going by a new name. Oh, something special has happened here. And so the news of this finally reached back to Ambika Kulna. Years of Hridaya Chaitanya. Wait. Dukhi Krishna, who I've initiated and sent to Jiva Goswami, is now carrying on with different tilak from what I've given him and a new name, all given by Jiva Goswami. How is this possible? I have not authorized Jiva Goswami to do this. All I've done is asked him to train my student in the Shastras. Now he's given him a new name and new tilak. This was understood to be a gross transgression of Vaishnava etiquette to so-called reinitiate someone, give them a different siddhanta, a different direction like that. So he became very, very upset. He said, all right, this is only second-hand information. I have not seen this directly. He appointed 10 of his immediate trusted followers. You go to Vrindavan, you find out what's going on. So they make a trip to Vrindavan. They went to Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami received him very nicely. But Shyamananda, sure enough, they saw. He's got a different tilak. He's going by the name Shyamananda. So, Prabhu, how has this happened? Gurudev has come to me in a dream and given me his mercy. It's all by the blessings of Gurudev. Which ultimately is true, because any mercy the disciple receives is by the blessings of the spiritual master. So, in this way, his associates, they came back to Ambika Kulna and they said, yes, Hridaya Chaitanya, this is all true. And Shyamananda, Dukhi Krishna, he says, this is all by your blessings. You have come to him in this life. He says, if I would have appeared to somebody in a dream, I would remember that. This is not happening. Someone is pulling some nonsense, some type of trick. So he gathered together a group with himself and the lead, and they went to Vrindavan. When they arrived there, they were received very, very nicely by Jiva Goswami. He was a little, it mentions he was polite, but a little distant and cold, that, you know, he was annoyed with Jiva Goswami when he's done like this. So, at any rate, Shyamananda came, heard his guru was there at the ashram of Jiva Goswami. He came and offered obeisances. Hridaya Chaitanya turned and said, he said, who is this? Shyamananda said, it is I, your disciple. I do not know you. I do not know that name or that tilak. This is not, you're not someone I have given this to. No, no, please, Gurudev. It mentions that Hridaya Chaitanya became so upset that he started to beat Shyamananda. Whether he beat him with his hand or some stick was there or something, it's not clear, but he started to beat him. So much so that the other disciples had to separate the two of them. They're going to kill him. He was very, very upset. So, Rita Chaitanya, I'm sorry, Shamananda again, he mentioned, well, this is all by your mercy. This is just work. So he made an effort to remove the tilaka. You know, tilaka, you know, we put it on in the morning if we have to go to work or something proper, just take a little water and take it off. It's gone. Prabhupada tells that story about the one factory owner. He said, from this day forth, no one can wear tilak when they come to the office, or into the factory, whatever. But there was one Vaishnava, he wore his tilak. And they all came the next day, big trouble. The boss said, okay, you get to keep wearing tilak because you're very bold. Everyone else you can't wear. So, at any rate, that's how you take, you just take a little water, it comes off. Came right back on the same way. Very surprising. So, Rita Chaitanya went back to the ashram that night. Shamananda went to the Swami. He was so upset. What to do? Rita Chaitanya is the disciple of Gauridas Pandit. Gauridas Pandit is the incarnation of Subal. Subal is the brother. So in this way, some conversation took place on another realm which we can only hear about, where it was instructed to Rita Chaitanya, no, this is the arrangement of Srimati Radharani. Who are you? Do you think you could challenge this? And he understood, of course we're shortening everything because it's approaching 9 o'clock. This story can go on. I've got the 19 pages, but you know what? So at any rate, it was indicated very clearly to Rita Chaitanya that this was the desire of Srimati Radharani. This was her blessings upon Shamananda. And the next day he apologized to himself. No, I made some mistake. This is wrong on my part. And he very happily left him in the charge of Yuga Goswami, and then he returned. Went back to Ambikakulam. For some time longer, Shamananda, Srinivas, and Narottam, they stayed with Yuga Goswami. And then, of course, we know there was that instrumental request from Janakamata in Bengal that you've got all the books of the Goswamis here. You should share them with us. And an arrangement was made for copying all the books, and they were put on a bullock cart. And Yuga Goswami announced that these three boys, my three students, Narottam, Srinivas, Shamananda, they're going to travel with the books to Bengal and go back to their Prabhudatta Desh. Narottam to Srinivas to West Bengal, Narottam to East Bengal, and Shamananda to Orissa to spread the teachings of Mahaprabhu. And of course, we know along the way the books were stolen, and Srinivas was instrumental in getting those books back. And eventually they returned each to their own places and preached very widely. One of the most prominent disciples of Shamananda was Rasikananda. And Rasik Malari. And he, with the in the service to his spiritual master Shamananda, he spread teachings of Mahaprabhu all over Orissa. As I mentioned, I do have so many pages here, but you know, the fact of the matter is that it is a weekday and everybody has so many services to do. But in this way, this was how the life of Shamananda came about, and he became a very prominent acharya in Orissa. Very, very significant service, and initiated wonderful devotees, and you know, encouraged everyone to take up the services of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we won't speak much about his departure. We generally don't go into those so well. But there was one. I'll just tell this one story here. There was a village of Kalpavini, and there was a yogi that lived there. His name was Damodar. And this Damodar came to have darshan one day at Shamananda. And this yogi was very powerful. He could do so many mystic things and acquire so many followers and wealth and all like this. So he came to take the darshan of Shamananda. And even from a distance, as he approached, he saw there was this amazing effulgence emanating from the body of Shamananda. And so he came closer and he offered his obeisances. And Shamananda greeted him very nicely. And he said to this yogi, Damodar, he said, in your purified state, you should always engage in the chanting of the names of Gauranga and Nityananda. They are extremely merciful, and if you chant their names, they will give you love of God. This was the message Shamananda always shared. Simply, you take up the chanting of the names of Lord Chaitanya and Murinanda, and you will receive love of God. So, what a simple message. So, this Damodar Yogi, although he was a great yogi, and although because of his yogic performances and tapasya, his heart was a little bit hard. There was no bhakti there. A little bit, of course, but, you know, so by hearing these words from Shamananda, his heart became softened. And he said, I will worship the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya and Murinanda if you were merciful to me. And so in this way, Shamananda gave him his blessings. And eventually he became a very great devotee and disciple of Shamananda. And every time, it mentions every time that he would chant the name of Lord Chaitanya and Murinanda, tears would come to his eyes. And he'd become completely overwhelmed with love for the twin brothers. So in this way, you know, Shamananda was very instrumental, very wealthy men in the village of Balarampur. They became his followers and established many temples and helped him assisting in spreading the glories of Krishna consciousness everywhere. He was invited when Narottama arranged the first festival of Puturi to celebrate the Gaur Purnima and the installation of the six sets of deities. He, of course, invited his old friend Shamananda. He was very happy to come. It was the reunion. Srinivas, Narottama, and Shamananda got together for the first time there. And it was just this wonderful reunion. 5 days of incredible festivals. Jnana Bhamata was there. And everyone had their part to play. Either doing kirtan, or doing the deity installation, or doing the cooking, or arranging all these things. And so this was a wonderful time for them. And then, of course, as with any festival, once the festival is over, they all separated and went their separate ways. And so we'll finish there just with these few pastimes of Shamananda. Very important day, so you know, if we have time today, we should take some opportunity to find some literatures, to read some pastimes, and there are very many stories that can be known about Shamananda. Anyone has any comments or questions, or Maharaj would like to add anything? Don Raj Prabhu, you put your hand up there.
I got some Sankirtan scores. I don't know where it came from, but I want to read it in connection with Shamananda Prabhu. It says, written on palm leaves, a letter from Narottam Das Thakur to Srila Jiva Goswami contains the annual book distribution scores for the year ending on Gaur Purnim of Shaka 1501 AD 1579. Srinivas Acharya, Bhagavatam with Vaishnav Toshini, 6. Janadasa songs 23, Govindadasa songs 19, Narottam Das's Prarthana 11, Bhakti Samrita Sindhu 1, Chaitanya Bhagavat 22, Dochanadasa's Chaitanya Mangala 6, Hari Bhakti Vilas 1, Murari Gupta Kardacha 1, Narottam Das Bhagavatam 2, Janadasa songs 21, part 156, Chaitanya Bhagavat 45, Chaitanya Chandramita 5, Vasu Ghosh's Gauranga Padyavali 34, Shamananda Bhagavatam 4, Jana songs 10, Govindadasa songs 11, other songs 34, Narottam Das's Prarthana 16, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 5, Ujwala Nilamani 1, Chaitanya Bhagavat 25, Chaitanya Chandramita 15, Vasya Ghosh's Gauranga Pajavali 14. Narottam Thakur concludes his letter with the following emotional comment. Until we are able to develop another type of technology to print the books, due to the difficulty involved in creating books by hand, which is being neglected, most of our book distribution program will be postponed. We are sure that one day some magnanimous person will come and will develop the movement of ecstatic love of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, distributing books all over the world. Until then, what will we, persons who are poor, bereft, and abominable, do? What is the benefit of discussing the stories of the Lord's incarnations, worshipping the Lord's deities, giving musical recitations of the Lord's pastimes, chanting the Lord's holy names on beads, etc., when we have such small scores?
I hate to be put on the spot. I apologize to anyone, but this letter has come under great question by our Shastric Advisory Committee as to its authenticity. No one's able to produce any reference to it or where it has come from. It's not considered to be accurate. It floated around the internet about a year ago very widely.
Yeah.
Everybody was posting it and quoting it, but there's no one's able to prove.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's what I mentioned. That's where it came from.
Yeah, it's a wonderful letter, but it appears to not be accurate. Pongo Vendor Prabhu?
I think you read chapter 8.
But we are in chapter 9.
It's wonderful. You explained beautiful. Don't take it wrong.
But we are
in chapter 9. But it's okay.
But this was the...
It never gets old.
Yes.
Well, now I'm curious about the email I received, if I read that wrong, or if it...
Am I doing chapter 8 or chapter 9? You told me about a great verse I'm having, but I'm not sure about that. Maybe I'll read your verses that I was supposed to do yesterday.
It's okay.
It's all
nectar,
Prabhu. It's all nectar.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Well, except the fact that it was completely inaccurate. But, wait a minute, there's no 34 to 24 to 30.
I want to ask you a question. Chaturatma Prabhu.
All right, now I'm confused.
Brahmananda Prabhu's disappearance, we're having a celebration.
Say that again?
Brahmananda Prabhu's disappearance, we're having a celebration in Vrindavan in a few days.
Yes.
So the importance of, you know, so many Vaishnavas are departing all the time, and we're discussing about the Vaishnavas, and what is the prime significance of you know, discussing all these things in Bhagavatam class?
Discussing them...
Great Vaishnavas.
No, it's essential because this is our history. This is our tradition. I mean, we can easily understand the associates of Mahaprabhu and his immediate followers, how important that is for us. Now, someone may say, all right, but, you know, Brahmananda was an associate. But these were the associates of Prabhupada. These were the immediate organizers and founders of Prabhupada's right-hand men in establishing ISKCON. So it's very important, you know, this is our history. Otherwise, we just go around sentimentally, you know, with the knowledge of the books, but no practical application of it. It's important for us to know these things because it gives us a more tangible connection to what we're doing. You know? Yeah, yeah. If we don't understand, I mean, any tradition, the lives of the saints and the sages and the, you know, they're all followed and read and understood. Because it gives a deeper understanding of what's being practiced, you know? So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a proponent of the lives of the Vaishnavacharyas, in case anybody didn't know. Now I just feel completely stupid and embarrassed sitting here having done the wrong chapter, you know? I'm so sorry.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful.
Yeah, well, obviously, it was the wrong one. Uncle Oyster Srimad Bhagavatam and Shamananda Pandit.